Hey everyone, I'm Andy Kahn, and let's get going with another episode of the Jambase Podcast. Jambase is a partner of Osiris Media, the podcast network for music. This episode features multi-instrumentalist and producer Thomas Brennick and drummer Homer Steinweiss of the Minahan Street Band. We recently chatted about the upcoming new Minahan Street Band album, The Exciting Sounds in the Minahan Street Band, which comes out on Friday, February 26th. That conversation is coming right up, but first, let's hear about this episode's sponsor, PolarTech.
We're happy to welcome a new sponsor to the podcast, PolarTech. We're teaming up with PolarTech for the Family Album Photo Contest. Just send us a picture of your good times outside, no matter the era, rocking that fleece. If we select your photo, you can win awesome prizes we know you'll love. Visit jambase.com to enter. For anyone that might not know, PolarTech is behind the fleece and fabrics that have been keeping heads warm for over 30 years. Like a quality tie-dye or well-worn Birks, PolarTech fleece has become a standard part of the live music scene, because even summer shows can get downright chilly. Originally made for hardcore climbers, backpackers, and outdoor enthusiasts, today PolarTech fabrics range from base layers, mid layers, and weather protection, all engineered to keep you warm, dry, cool, and safe. Today, like a lot of us, PolarTech is also older and a little wiser. Since pioneering the first fabrics made from recycled plastic bottles in 1993, PolarTech has kept 1.7 billion bottles from landfills and now knits over 200 fabric styles from post-consumer materials. As revolutionary as fleece was back in the day, today PolarTech is focused on the future of more styles made of recycled inputs, natural fibers, and bio-based solutions. It's a future of sustainably manufactured, eco-engineered, American-made fabrics for the next generation looking to get outside, feel the music, and rock that fleece. PolarTech is the science of fabric.
Thanks to everyone out there that's already submitted a photo to the PolarTech Family Photo Album. You can also enter by uploading your pictures to the official Jambase Facebook and Twitter accounts. Hopefully that PolarTech gear is keeping everyone out there as warm as can be. It was minus 22 degrees here in Minneapolis this morning, and I know most of the rest of the country is facing harsh winter conditions. So stay safe out there, everyone. I want to turn now to some sad news since our last episode, and the passing of several prominent and influential figures from the world of music. Vocalist Mary Wilson, who co-founded the renowned Motown singing group The Supremes, died at the age of 76. Wilson passed away suddenly on February 8th at her home in Henderson, Nevada. The Supremes lineup of Wilson, Diana Ross, and Florence Ballard had an incredible 12 number one hit singles between 1964 and 65, including a run of five straight with Where Did Our Love Go, Baby Love, Come See About Me, Stop in the Name of Love, and Back in My Arms Again. Several personnel changes came in subsequent years, including Ross's exit in 1970. In 1977, the Supremes broke up as Wilson was the only original member still in the group. Mary Wilson and the Supremes were inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. Wilson went on to enjoy a successful solo career and pursued other creative endeavors, such as writing memoirs and performing regularly in concert. Acclaimed jazz keyboardist Chick Corea died at the age of 79. A statement from his family confirmed his death on Tuesday, February 9th, from a rare form of cancer, which was only discovered very recently. Known for his influential contributions to jazz fusion, Corea's resume is lined with collaborations with many fellow highly talented musicians. He was a member of Miles Davis's group and contributed to such landmark records as In a Silent Way and Bitches Brew. Corea led the jazz fusion outfit Return to Forever, which was integral in pushing the development of the genre. Corea also founded the fusion group called the Electric Band, and among the many musicians who collaborated with Corea include Herbie Hancock, Bela Fleck, Christian McBride, Joshua Redman, Chaka Khan, Steve Gadd, Cab Calloway, Blue Mitchell, Herbie Mann, Stan Getz, and many, many others. In 2015, Corea won two Grammy Awards, bringing his career total to 22. Corea's family shared a final note from the beloved musician, which stated, quote, "I want to thank all of those along my journey who have helped keep the music fires burning bright. It is my hope that those who have an inkling to play, write, perform, or otherwise, do so. If not for yourself, then for the rest of us. It's not only that the world needs more artists, it's also just a lot of fun. And to my amazing musician friends who have been like family to me as long as I've known you, it has been a blessing and an honor learning from and playing with all of you. My mission has always been to bring the joy of creating anywhere I could, and to have done so with all of the artists that I admire so dearly. This has been the riches of my life. End quote. One of Korea's early collaborators was free jazz drummer Milford Graves, who passed away on February 12th, also at the age of 79. An eclectic innovator, Graves was also an acupuncturist, herbalist, martial artist, programmer, and professor. As described on his website, the enigmatic Graves was a, quote, consummate autodidactic with a syncretic approach, who invented a martial art form called Yara based on the movements of the praying mantis, African ritual dance, and lindy hop in 1972. Shortly thereafter, Graves joined the Black Music Division at Bennington College, where he taught for 39 years and was professor emeritus, end quote. I highly recommend learning more about Graves' unique approach to music and life by watching the documentary film Milford Graves, Full Mantis. And lastly, I want to recognize and give gratitude to the life and work of Rupert Neve, whose name may not be as familiar as the others I've just spoken about, but Neve is no doubt one of the most important figures in the history of recorded music. Neve, who passed away on February 12th at the age of 94, founded Neve Electronics in 1961. And went on to manufacture some of the most sought-after and revered mixing consoles used in recording studios around the world. Neve was given the Grammy Award for Lifetime Achievement in 1997, and Dave Grohl featured a Neve console in the documentary film Sound City. Some of the greatest recordings of the past 60 years were made thanks to a Neve console. All right, now let's talk a little bit about my interview with Tom and Homer. Tom is calling in from his home in California, and Homer, who you might tell from the street noise, was calling in while driving around New York. We started the chat off by having the guys give a little background on how they came together to co-found Minahan Street Band, which also includes Leon Michaels, Nick Mavishan, and David Guy. Tom and Homer backed the late Sharon Jones as members of the Dat Kings, and also backed the late Charles Bradley as well. They also record with L. Michaels Affair, which is led by Leon, and have appeared on dozens of recordings on the outstanding Brooklyn-based label Daptone Records and its imprints. The bulk of our conversation focused on the exciting sounds in the Minahan Street Band, which is their third studio album and their first since 2012's The Crossing. Like their previous records, Brennick produced the exciting sounds, and we talked a lot about the recording process for the new album. One of the details Tom shared was how vocalists Alicia Chakor and Sondra Williams ended up contributing to one of the songs on the album. You may know Chakor as a member of the Tedeschi Trucks Band, and Williams as a member of the Dap Kings, who along with Jones performed with Phish when they covered the Rolling Stones' Exile on Main Street on Halloween in 2009. We talked about how Homer and Tom collaborate as songwriters, the impact the COVID-19 pandemic has had on them with respect to their studio work, what's on tap for 2021, and much, much more. Leading us into that interview, here's a bit of the exciting sounds of the Minahan Street Band single, The Duke. Two of the members of the Minahan Street Band. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. Can you introduce yourselves, though, so our listeners know who's who when you guys are talking?
Sure. This is Tom Brennick.
And this is Homer Steinweiss.
All right, fellas. Thank you so much.
And we are the Minahan Street Band.
Hell yeah. Well, and you're here primarily to talk about your new album, The Exciting Sounds of the Minahan Street Band, which comes out on February 26th, and I'm super excited about. It's your first Minahan Street Band record in 9 years.
Jesus Christ, that's insane.
I know. So before we dig into that, you both have just incredible resumes. You've played with so many different people. I think of you as musicians when I write your names in an article. There's always a parenthesis after it with the list of projects that you're involved in. So can we start by kind of quickly going over how you two first met and started playing together?
Holmes, yeah. I'd love to hear your version of it.
We both played in, well, I was playing in Sharon Jones and the Dap Kings, and we went to see Tommy's band in Staten Island. I think it was called Fast Breaking Classics, or there was a different band. I forget what it was. And then our organ player didn't want to go on tour, so we saw Tommy just playing in the band, and we were like, "You want to play organ?" Even though he was playing guitar, and then he hopped on the road with us and played organ. And then we just became friends on the road with the Dap Kings. And then he started playing guitar with the Dap Kings. And then we started doing all these side projects. That's it.
Okay.
True story.
What are then some of those side projects that you work on together?
Let's see. Well, the first one, I think that time that we met, a little bar in Staten Island, Owens was with Leon and Nick, and Leon had been working on a project called the L. Michaels Affair. And Leon brought me over to his parents' place in the city. And that was the first project, I think, that like outside of the Dap Kings that we were in together. And that was really like kind of Leon's record, where him and Nick played, Nick played a lot of drums on it. I mean, I know Holmes definitely played drums on it, but when Leon put the band together to play live, that was like kind of the first, the rhythm section was kind of like Homer had a band called the Mighty Imperials, and it was the four Mighty Imperials plus myself on guitar. So there's two guitars, me and Sean Solomon. And then Leon put together a pretty big horn section for the live band, which I think maybe was like Mike Lenhart and Aaron Johnson on trombone. I don't remember who else. Mm-hmm. But, and then after that, shit. It's a blur, man. I don't know. I mean, like, Menahan Street Band started out of my apartment between
tours.
Yeah,
I feel like Menahan was the first thing that we worked on collaboratively, like, at the same time. Not just, like, overdubbed for Leon.
Right.
Because we went straight into that Menahan stuff, like, right when we took breaks from the road, we were like, let's just record some random shit. And that's what turned into, like, early Menahan.
Yeah. Yeah, we were kicking ideas around, like, in hotel rooms that we would go home and record and shit like that. And then, I mean, you know, but we were also tracking for like Lee Fields at Truth and Soul Records on My World. I'd say it wasn't too long after that. We did like Lee's first record on after Soulfire Records. And then, you know, I mean, there was like countless sessions that the Dap Kings were just the house band for, where me and Homer were just the core of the rhythm section. So we were just playing together in like a bunch of on the regular between touring and not touring. For a solid 7 years, I'd say we were like playing together like pretty nonstop.
Yeah, that's it. That's totally right.
And Charles Bradley's in there too, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was also recorded on Menahan Street at the same time that we made the first Menahan record. We were basically recording like a lot of music, and it turned out to be one instrumental album and then one album for Charles. And then by the release of Maybe Make the Road by Walking, we had moved the studio out of my apartment, and we had rented a loft in Williamsburg, and we had gone partners, me and Holmes, in the studio that was called Dunham Sound Studios that we had for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And pretty important part of our history, I'd say, because we made a lot of records there. We made The Crossing there, the second Menahan record. We made Charles's Victim of Love. Our relationship with Mark Ronson kind of ventured outside of the Dap Kings, and we started, we became like a core rhythm section for his records he was producing, and even projects that he would pass on that we would kind of pick up the slack and finish producing a couple things here and there. And what else did we do there? I mean, we did the Shala Dawes record there. We did Lee Field's record. What the hell is the record called? Emma Jean. We did that record there.
So many records, you're forgetting what they're called. So do you guys consider yourself songwriting collaborators as well?
I mean, I consider like throwing ideas off of Homer is like, I'm going to get whatever I'm thinking of the rhythm should be. It's going to come back better. It's going to be like, what is like, almost like, you know, he hears like what I'm hearing. And then he just like, it's the next level. And that's, I think, some shit that you find like once in a lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, reading
each other's minds. Yeah. So I've seen you both play live several times over the years. But I haven't talked to many musicians who do as much studio session work as you guys do, like some of the stuff you guys were just talking about. How has the lockdown and COVID-19 pandemic affected that side of your careers?
My shit is a little bit crazy. You want to go first, Holmes?
Sure. I think it's not that different, except that there's just less people passing through New York and less people wanting to do big sessions. So every time I'll still go to the studio and work, but it's usually with less people and less projects. Like if instead of someone coming to New York from LA, they might just call me up and ask me to overdub drums and send them back to them or something like that.
Gotcha. What about you, Tom?
Yeah, well, for me, it's a little bit more complicated. I moved to LA 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, mm-hmm. From New York. And I moved into I started sharing a studio space with Ronson called the Sound Factory.
Okay.
Which is this like legendary studio that was built in the 60s by the Righteous Brothers and then sold to Sunset Sound. And it was this like epic, like kind of overdub studio. Mm-hmm. In the 70s, where everybody like Marvin Gaye cut his vocals to What's Going On There, and the Jackson 5 cut
Oh, wow.
I Want You Back There, most of James Taylor's early records, Linda Ronstadt, and then all the way through like records mixed in the 90s, and then like all the way through the 1000s, like Danger Mouse produced the Chili Peppers there like 7 years ago.
Oh, wow.
And anyway, I've been out here rocking for 3 years out of that space, which has kind of opened a new kind of door of work out of New York, you know, when, and then like two things kind of happened that kind of like really kind of threw a couple wrenches in my life. One was that the lease to the Sound Factory was coming to an end and I needed to figure out a studio space in Los Angeles. And two, there was a fucking pandemic going on. So trying to find a new studio space was pretty impossible. Trying to get a loan from the bank to start a business during a pandemic, they were like, you gotta wait till the pandemic's over, buddy. We're not giving anybody any loans. Mm-hmm. So I am currently like undertaking the fucking, I'm gonna take over the lease when it runs out of Sound Factory and hold it down for another year, which is a little bit of a leap of faith.
Yeah.
To do it.
That's dope.
But,
yeah.
But that's, and I don't think, I haven't even told Homer this. This is like brand new news.
That's the right move, though.
Word. So starting in April, I'm holding down the Sound Factory, and now I'm in this whole situation where, like, you know, Mark is flying a bunch of his gear back to New York because he moved back to New York. Dude, I got to take out a loan and like buy a new control room. I got to replace a bunch of equipment. So I'm like, I'm in a state of like, I want to record and fucking hustle and like make as much music as possible to make this all work out for me. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of like I've had a place to record that was very comfortable, starting with my apartment and then Dunham Records. And then after Dunham, me Holmes teamed up with Leon Michaels and Nick Mofshin. We have a recording studio called Diamond Mine in New York. That's mm-hmm. an amazing studio and still rocking. But this move out here with my family and everything, it's crucial that I have a space out here. So here I am. And, you know, I mean, it's like Holmes is saying, there's still session work. But it's definitely different. I mean, there is a small crew and everybody's got to get tested and just like text a negative test and come to the session.
Right.
But it certainly hasn't stopped work. And, I mean, I kind of, because of the situation that I'm in, I'm just like kind of hitting the studio extremely hard. I'm working on like a soundtrack. I'm producing records for Daptone. I'm producing records for other labels. I'm just kind of like, there's this artist that me and Homer both work with, this singer named Kirby, who's amazing. And she's out here. Some friends of mine from New York got stuck out here during the pandemic. So there's a little crew. It's pretty, there's like something burgeoning and I'm pretty excited about it.
It sounds like you're very busy.
Extremely busy.
A lot of musicians I talk to, they've been talking about how slow they are and how this is the longest they've gone without work or without touring. But your response seems like it's quite the opposite for you.
I mean, I'm kind of the type of person, and Holmes knows this about me, I would just like make work anyway. You know what I mean? Like whenever we had a studio, it's just like, what are we creating? What's the next project? you know, and it almost ties into like, why is there 9 years between the Menahan record? It's kind of like, cause the Menahan records are fucking special, man. And it's like, we kind of make these records. We'll just do a song once every few months when there's like an idea that's special enough or the mood is right. And in between that, like we really focused on making records with the singers that we have these relationships with. Mm-hmm. And whether it's like, you know, Homer doing a Holy Hive thing and he's bringing in a couple of us to do this or that, or Leon's doing a Lee Fields record, or, you know, whatever record I'm doing, like we all have each other's back. We all kind of like sesh out on that shit together. We all write for those projects together. And then like when there's, you know, it's almost like just like when the time is right or, you know, the inspiration is there, you know, we'll try to make an instrumental record that has some weight to it and that's special. And it's just like, not just like a library record. You know what I mean? Like if we wanted to make library records, we could probably pump out library records, which is something I'm considering to do to make some fucking money to pay for the sound factory. But these records are not that, you know what I mean? Like these records are almost like scores to movies that don't exist or something. I mean, to me, they're more special than that. You know, I can't like totally explain it, but the Menahan records hold a certain place for me that's like super special from all the other records that I do.
And we've mentioned a couple of times, there's been a gap between the last one, The Crossing, that came out in 2012, and this new one coming out, The Exciting Sounds of the Menahan Street Band. What was the catalyst for getting together to record this new album?
I remember, I mean, it must have been some years back when we just had like the Diamond Mine, we were just building that new studio. And maybe a year or two in, because like we built that studio and we were like, whatever projects were hanging over from our previous studio, we like immediately, like I was immediately like mixing a Budos record or some shit as soon as we went into Diamond Mine. But as soon as the dust settled, I remember Homer saying like, man, we should record something just to get the ball rolling on the next Menahan record. And I think he had an idea and we recorded that idea, which led to recording more ideas. And then it really got the ball rolling. And I feel like a couple of those first songs we recorded were great, but we never even finished them or mixed them, or maybe even didn't even put horns on them. But like, it was just the idea of like breaking the ice, because I mean, you know, enough time goes by and it's just kind of like becomes almost like intimidating. Like, Jesus Christ, what are we going to do for the next one, man? You know, we're like always trying to level up the shit and not make the same record. So like, what is it that's going to make it different and special? But Holmes, you remember that? Like, I remember that vividly, man. Like, you were like, man, like, let's like record something. That, you know what I mean?
I remember that. That was fun. I didn't realize that was the beginning of the record.
It was. I mean, I think it set it into motion, and then it just became like easier to bring ideas in. And then it was more of a matter of like, a lot of those songs were like, there's a point where Dave Guy, our trumpet player, is a regular member of the Roots now, and he would pop in after the Jimmy Fallon show. It's like two stops on the train to get from Rockefeller to Long Island City. Mm-hmm. And he would bring like Black Thought, sometimes Questlove, sometimes the Roots would come and cut shit in the studio. But there was some point where like we were really fucking with Black Thought, and we had these really loose sessions where he was just kind of sitting on the couch quietly, like writing the whole time, like probably jotting lyrics. And we were all just very loosely like switching instruments and just like kicking out ideas, like really short bursts of ideas and recording them. And then like a year or two later, I went back and listened to them, and I grabbed like two of those songs and put them on the Menahan record because nothing happened with them. But they had that incredible energy of like just the five of us in the room with a really loose spirit. Like Nick is on drums, Homer's on bass. I was maybe just engineering. Dave Guy was on guitar. Just like everything was fucking upside down. And I mean, it's those songs are like some of my favorite on the record. They're definitely standouts.
So
you remember those joints, Holmes? You remember those joints, right?
Hells yeah.
Yeah, that session was fun as hell. But yeah, so like songs like that like would accumulate when we're doing these sessions for other people. And you know, you do sessions and the shit doesn't work out. Or hey, write a song for this artist, and then you write a song and they don't take it. Shit like that. You know, I had like almost 14 songs or something that seemed cool. And there was one point where I really wanted the record to be like obviously an homage to Jay Dilla's Donuts, where the songs didn't have to be long songs. They could just be like 60-second, 90-second little moves. Mm-hmm, and I was kicking around the idea of calling the record Garlic Knots.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I know what you mean. There's definitely a handful of those tracks that are just barely over a minute long that have that sort of interlude aspect to it, but are still a complete thought. You know, they're
I think so.
fully formed songs in and of themselves that kind of add to the cohesiveness of the entire record.
Yeah, that was definitely on purpose. I think anybody who likes music probably thinks that Donuts by Jay Dilla is a special record. But, you know, I hadn't like intentionally tried to do that with some Menahan cuts where like make them really short, but really potent. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely a little bit of an inspiration for making the record. And that's why, you know, instead of having like 10 songs, that's why this record has a closer to 14, because there are these little snippets, or almost like there's this song, the last song, I think, on the first side of the record. Well, if you have the LP.
Not yet.
Yeah,
it's pre-ordered.
Dude, I'm waiting. The UPS is coming today. I'm waiting for the record. I can't wait to see it. In the alternate cover version too, they got rejected by Daptone. Oh, I'm excited about that. Man, we got a special stash of those.
I'll give you my address after the call.
Put some fucking money in that envelope, bro.
You're saying the last song on side A.
I think it's either the last one. I mean, yeah, like something about those little minute songs turned out to be really special, and they almost seem like, you know, like they really were intended for like some moment in a film or something, you know?
Yeah, you know, your sound gets described as cinematic a lot. Are you thinking visually when you're crafting these songs?
I mean, I'm not. I'm thinking sonically, man. Like Menahan Street Band for me is like sonic exploration. And it started out as a lo-fi thing in an apartment bedroom. And now it's definitely more of like, there's something about like, it could be a beautiful song, but like recorded really gritty. But sonically, I'm definitely exploring. And this record was like, we brought in synthesizers and I don't know. I mean, it's also the challenge of like, this was recorded all on a 1-inch eight track and mixed down from a 1-inch 8-track to a 1/4-inch 2-track, never hit a computer.
Oh, wow.
100% all analog, flew across the country with the tapes to mix them in LA after recording them in New York. And I mean, I feel like that's a fucking triumph these days, because it's so easy to just put it on a computer and finish it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and I'm with that, man. I'm like, it's especially in quarantine, like Holmes is saying, you got to do some work, man, you record some shit, send it to somebody. It's incredibly easy. You can record it really well. But there's something about the way that it forces you to work when you're limited to working on tape. And sonically, there's a warmth that I've yet to figure out how to get through any fucking plugin on a computer. Or even if like Pro Tools and you're using all the same outboard gear. I've done it recently where I've just like, you know, I can hear it like that, and I can't like figure out what it is, but there's a warmth and like a difference just in size and depth that I can only get on tape. And that Menahan project is one of the few projects I can do where the caliber of musicianship is so bonkers, it doesn't need any fucking editing. And I can just do the whole thing, you know, like live takes, overdubs, and mix down from tape. And I think that, you know, like the mix, I think it speaks for itself sonically. But yeah, I don't really think visually, to me, it's completely a sonic exploration.
It's the record sounds really cool. I encourage everyone to listen to it on headphones, particularly. It's one of those headphone treats.
It was not on headphones.
But I'm just saying, though, it's not like...
But it's definitely got crazy stereo imaging. Stereo imaging.
Like I was shoveling snow and listening to it, and I kept turning around thinking something was around me. I mean, it has an atmosphere to it that's really incredible. I wanted to ask you about one of the songs on it. The last song on it, it's called There Was a Man. And right at the beginning, it sounds like that's Charles Bradley. Is that him?
Yeah, that's Charles, man.
And I don't want to assume, but it sounds as though that track is somewhat of a tribute to him. There's a mournful aspect to it. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I tell you, it was really more of like coincidence, really. I always like to put, I love Mulatu Astake, I love Ethiopian music, and there's a vibe when an Ethiopian 60s music, when they're playing like a major scale or their major shit, it just, to me, always sounds like Sunday morning, kind of beautiful Sunday morning vibes.
Mm-hmm, sure.
And there could be some melancholy in there, but it's really kind of more beautiful than anything. And there's like a song on the first Menahan record that has that flavor called Esma. There's a song maybe on the second record that probably has maybe a little more up-tempo Ethiopian of a vibe. But that to me was like the Ethiopian influenced ballad of the record. And it just so happened to be when I was recording it, I'm recording over old tape, right? Uh-huh. And it just happened to be like, I think what you hear on there was like, me and Charles would just like record demos. And there was a point in my life where I never used a computer. So I would just roll one microphone in the room to a tape machine and just roll it for 30 minutes. And that was just one of those things where there was like me on piano and Charles on the background singing. And, you know, I guess I didn't erase that. And when we were recording the rhythm track, it just happened to be right before the song started. And in all the rough mixes, I had that scream in there. It was just always a part of the song to me.
Oh, that's so cool.
And when it was like mixed down time, I was mixing it with Gabe Roth and I was like, dude, we have to keep this Charles scream in there. It's just kind of like as a happy accident. It wasn't intentional, but it like for fans and for people who know Charles and the depths of that relationship, you know, it's like to me, it was just a beautiful thing to stick in there. That's really small, but could be extremely effective. And then that song is like beautiful melancholy, you know, I wasn't going for a sad thing.
No, I don't think
anything, you know, it's really like it gets to that fuzz guitar solo. It's like, you know, I'm like trying to tug at heartstrings in that song.
Yeah, it's not, you know, it's not sad by any means. I don't want to imply that, but it definitely has a gorgeousness or a tenderness to it it reminds you of, it evokes the relationship you likely had with Charles, I assume.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't intentional, man, but it's definitely like, it just seemed so right, you know?
I think it turned out perfect, and it was a really neat surprise to hear right at the end of the record.
Thanks, man.
Other surprising things is on the song Stepping Through Shadow, there's some vocals on it. Who are the singers?
Oh yeah, okay, so that song was like a really cool song I recorded like when my son was born, which was like 7 years ago. I set up in my house because, you know, you're like stuck at home all the time being a new dad.
Definitely.
And I set up like a 4-track cassette, and I had like a little Wurlitzer and a little drum machine, and I recorded, you know, what I thought was like a little lullaby to the 4-track, brought it to the studio, transferred it to the 8-track, and then did all the overdubs that are on it. And then Leon had just got a Mellotron. So we had a Mellotron at the studio, and the vocals were originally the Mellotron. There's like a, you know, voice.
Sure.
And, you know,
the wobbly. Yeah, wobbly. Yeah.
So I played that shit on the Mellotron, and then I was doing some background vocals on this 45 called, this one-off Menahan 45 called Tommy Don't.
Yes.
Which was like this song that was supposed to be for Charles, and then he never got to sing on it because he passed. And then I don't know, I was going through some shit, and I thought I'd put the background vocals on it anyway just to hear it. And I had Sandra from the Dap King, Sun and Star, and Alicia Shakur, And I think maybe one of the, you know, this is a group called the Gospel Queens. That's part of Daptone Stable. And this woman, Edna, I love to death. And it was like Edna and her granddaughter. And I had them all in there doing the backgrounds for There's a New Day Coming, the B-side to Tommy Dolan. It's really the same song, just like part one. Anyways, while I had them there, I was like, oh shit, man, I should have these ladies like redo the Mellotron part on that Menahan song.
Oh, cool.
So there's actually voices, and it's Sandra Williams and Alicia Shakur and Edna Johnson, the three women singing on that. I think that maybe I kept the Mellotron, just had them sing right on top of the Mellotron and like bounced it.
It's beautiful, man. I really love it.
But thanks, man. That was for my kiddo.
So is there anything else from you guys that's coming up for 2021 that you would like our listeners to know about?
Sure, I got a few things.
Come on, Tom.
Let's see. I got a 45 coming out with this band called Los Yesterdays on Penrose Records on Valentine's. We got a song called No Clown. And there's a really killer video along with it.
Nice.
There's a record I produced for this young lady named Molly Lewis, who is a whistler, and we did an exotic whistle record on Jag Jaguar Records coming out in like May.
Interesting.
And then there's a Menahan 45 coming out that features some East LA vocals from a guy named Mike Noriega and Vicky Benavides, and they did a song called The Stranger on top of an instrumental that we had called Black Velvet.
Nice.
Yeah, man. I did a 45 on this girl named Trish Toledo that's coming out on Now Again Records, the Mighty Egon's label. And man, I got some other shit kicking around I can't really talk about.
Okay. All right. That's good.
And then I'm trying to make Future Soul records right now. And yeah, I got some special shit cooking with Kirby. I got to send it to Homer.
Homer.
Pushing it forward, man. Pushing it forward.
What's up?
You're always so busy, man. What do you have lined up?
Let's see. Holy Hive single is coming out, I think, in March or something, and then we're gonna do a second album this fall is gonna come out. So that's gonna be the first single off that. I just had a song mixed by this artist named Ruth B, called Spaceship, and that should be on her next record. I don't know when that's coming out, but that's a cool song. I don't know what else. Just like hanging out with like new L. Michaels Affair shit. This new Menahan record coming out. Just staying busy in the studio. But I don't know what's coming out this year besides those two records. Kirby stuff should be on its way too. That me and Tommy are both working on.
Well, we're looking forward to all that exciting new music from you guys. And definitely looking forward to the exciting sounds of Menahan Street Band. Well, everybody should check it out February 26th.
Exciting.
It is an aptly titled record, I think. And I'm excited for the rest of the world to get to hear it. So thanks, guys. Thanks so much for taking the time to talk with me today. And best of luck. Stay safe out there.
Well, thank you so much.
Right on. Thanks, Andy, man. Appreciate you having us, man.
Yeah, definitely. Fun. Cheers, guys.
All right. We'll be right back.
brings us to the end of episode 77 of the Jam Bass Podcast. Many thanks to the Minahan Street Band guys for taking some time to chat with me. Get their new album, The Exciting Sounds of the Minahan Street Band, when it comes out on February 26th. Thanks to our sponsor, Polar Tech. Be sure to enter the Family Album Photo Contest with a picture sporting Polar Tech gear for your chance to win one of our several outstanding prizes. Thanks to Jake Alexander for his help producing the episode. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, if there's a responsibly socially distanced way to go see live music, grab a mask, go see live music.